What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew, and this is the Brute Strength Podcast. This episode, I interviewed Dave Bradley of I-99 Fit, and that is a company that breaks down the mechanics of all movements specific to gymnastics in CrossFit. This is the most technical interview I've done yet, and he really breaks down the way he teaches the handstand push-up and the muscle-up, which are the two most complex movements in CrossFit. In relation to gymnastics. Dave is a very enthusiastic individual, and passion plays a huge role in his coaching style, and he explains why that is important in a coach, and he goes on to explain a lot of the other characteristics that make up a successful coach. As always, you can look up the show notes at brutestrengthtraining.com/podcast. Hope you enjoy the show. What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew with the Brute Strength Training Podcast. I'm here with Dave Bradley, founder of I-99 Fit, and he's been involved in gymnastics for 35 years?
That's right, 35.
Awesome. We are in D-Town CrossFit in Denver, Colorado, and he's got a sweet little setup, lots of cool gadgets all around the gym, and I'm really excited for this. Dave was never an elite gymnast, but he has a really unique way of going about things, and I think you will learn a lot from this show.
Thanks.
So thanks for being here.
Yeah, for sure. This is fun. This is gonna be good.
Can you explain a little bit about your company for us? What does I-99 Fit do?
Sure. I-99 Fit is a group of coaches that all work for me. I founded it about a year ago. What we do is we travel around Denver, and actually now the whole country for that matter. And we spend our time teaching, you know, functional fitness athletes to do gymnastics. I mean, we also have added Olympic lifting. Jess, who you see here, has joined the team, and Christian Lucero. Those guys are bringing in the similarities between Olympic lifting and gymnastics. And so when we teach them together, people really make that connection, and they learn both faster, right? So, we travel around. We're about 30 different locations every week in Denver, teaching, you know, groups of three.
Wait,
and five.
30 a week?
Yeah, we cycle around. We have nine coaches, and they cycle around, and they work at all these different boxes in the area. And then we also travel Chicago, Virginia, Florida, you name it.
I love it. So one of the things you were just telling me and Jake about right here was a pretty interesting little spin on coaching in general. Can you tell us a little bit about what you think is most important in
sure.
a coach?
Yeah. So, you know, my whole style, we do a lot of clinics for coaches. You guys call them certs. We call them seminars. But the first thing that I teach any coach that I'm working with is how to use their voice the right way. So the most common thing that I hear when I hear people cueing athletes at a distance, first of all, I'd rather be hands-on. Always, you know, shaping positions, lifting people above my head, getting involved. But when you can't do that, then the most powerful word that you can say is yes. But what you do is you show them kind of how to do the skill, give them a demo or have another athlete do it, and then you point out the most important things for them to do. But then after that, they're on their own. And so what you're looking for is that one thing they do right. And when they do that one thing right, it's yes. And then you see them naturally, they respond, and then they do the next little segment right, and then the next segment right, and by the time you finish, it's like, yes, 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 that's it, that's the way I want to see it, right there. And then, so what I think ends up happening with athletes like that is that every athlete, I don't care if you're an elite level athlete, I don't care if you're a beginner, that's what they're here for. They don't want a coach to stand across the room and be like, do this and a long-winded speech, right? Mm-hmm. We want to get into what does it take to get them to make an immediate change, and that's
right.
What we do.
Right. I love it, man. And I've kind of shifted in the opposite direction, and I'm glad that I've learned this today. I've been super critical lately of my athletes, you know, like just nitpicking them and finding the smallest little things that they can correct, but I forget that half of it is just mental, and they need to They need to believe in themselves to continue buying into you, buying into their own training and that kind of thing. So that's just huge, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, the one thing that's great about this sport is that these athletes are super motivated. They are not people who are slackers, right? They are people who come in with the right attitude. They're already fit. They've got just the bright personality to be here. So you don't have to kick their ass. Mm-hmm. It's not necessary. No is never a word that you should use. Right. It's always yes. Yes. And as often as you can say it when it's right, but you have to have that critical eye. I would say that being very critical and being able to break down and see the little inefficiencies is really important. It takes years to develop that. But when you see something that's the right movement, right, that's what you reinforce.
Don't hesitate to tell them about that.
That's right.
And it's also probably just about how you communicate. Even though it may be wrong, you can communicate it two different ways. That's wrong, or you can improve on this, right?
That's exactly right. That's coaching 101. If you want to be a great coach, you have to have the critical eye. You have to have the ability to, you know, time it just right to say it at the right time to get the right response from that athlete. And then ultimately, I think the thing that makes a great coach is enthusiasm, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they come to see you, right? When I think about our clinics, if you go and look at what anybody says after a survey or whatever, it's always, we had the best time ever. It was amazing. These guys were obnoxious and loud and had a great time, and the energy was unbelievable. And that's why I think we've been doing this for a year now, and that's why, you know, we've coached over like 1,200 people, right?
That's awesome.
So it's working.
That's awesome, man. All right, let's dive into what you're best at. What are some things that you see CrossFitters and athlete and or CrossFit coaches doing that they can improve on? What are they doing wrong, and what
Sure.
should they be doing?
So I don't know that it's about wrong, right? So we don't ever look at anything as right or wrong. Mm-hmm. What we look at is, let's find a way to introduce things to athletes in a way that is the most efficient. So that's it in a nutshell. And so some of the things that we see happening in this sport that I think is the opposite of the sport of gymnastics is we see that there's a lot of things being done with bent knees, with legs separated. And so I'll give you an example. Like, one of the most natural things that a muscle will do is it will rebound back into its natural position. So when you watch somebody who bends their knees, for instance, on a kipping pull-up, right? They bend their knees, they separate their legs. Well, what happens is the hip flexor and the quad no longer stretch when you bend your knees. So when that happens, it's really, you're kind of giving up what we call free energy. Free energy comes from that any time that something happens naturally without you having to think about it, without you having to try to contract those muscles to make something happen. So when I look around and I see, you know, the typical, you know, kind of CrossFit a muscle up, right? It's like, you know, this crazy like arch scorpion thing, right? Or a handstand, it's the same thing, right? Those are the things that I think are off, right? Number one, we want to keep our body as long and as tight as possible, right? So when I say tight, I mean tension, not so tight you can't move, but have good tension in your body, because tighter is lighter. We always say that if, you know, you apply 10% more of your effort towards just general body tension, that it's going to make the skill 30% easier, right? So at the end of the day, those are the areas where I think we can make a big difference, is starting to look at an athlete aesthetically. Mm-hmm. Because if it looks easy, it's freaking easy,
right?
If it looks hard and it looks gnarly, then it's not easy. It's hard. So those are the things that I would say for the sport that I think we need to do, is we need to start, you know, really just working hard at trying to identify what, you know, what it takes to make things look attractive. Right. As well as at the same time, I think it's important for us to recognize, I mean, the people from the sport of gymnastics are, you know, oftentimes are a little bit too critical there, right? I mean, we all know that when we're in the middle of a WOD, that it's going to break down. But what we want to do is we want to teach people to go as far as they can with the ideal shape, right? The right technique. And then if it starts to break down, that's part of the game, right? We know that's part of it. So
yes, I mean, something you told me earlier is with your muscle up technique,
yeah,
right? We're using less hips there, and we're using a little bit more arms, maybe.
Yep.
But if, you know, most of CrossFit relies on the midline. So if we're using less of that in the muscle up, then you go sprint, then you go do clean and jerks, that kind of thing. Then you have more energy and that kind of thing for those movements, right?
For sure. Well, when I think about a muscle up, you know, I always hear, this is funny because I always hear people say, you know, hip drive, hip drive, hip drive. Well, that's partially right. Hips are involved, right? But actually we teach something called body wave, right? A body wave is really recruiting all the muscles in the entire body. So if you think about it, the effort is then dissipated across all the muscles at once. So no one muscle group is becoming fatigued. Mm-hmm. And then when you think about, just like, you know, using gravity and using, you know, the falling action of a long body versus a short body. I mean, there's so many little easy things to do to make this skill more efficient, right? So, you know, when I think about a muscle up, it's not a muscle up, right? In gymnastics, it's a front uprise. And, to teach a front uprise, it's all about making your body as long as possible. And when it's time to kind of change your shape, rather than do one like hips, right? Or pulling with your biceps or whatever, we just make a subtle wave throughout the whole body. Like that 1980s dance move, the worm, right? You know what I'm talking about? Like, so you got to be thinking you're kind of worming your way up the rings. But ultimately what that's doing is that's kind of, you know, directing your chest above the rings, which is where we want to end up anyhow.
Right. Right. How much time do you think CrossFitters need to be spending on the basic elements like the hollow body position, you know, just static holds in general, and how vigilant do they need to be with those positions?
So that's a good question. We prescribe to be able to over time inject it into your regular routine. I think that athletes should spend about 30 minutes 3 days a week to get it integrated. Now you're going to already be working on hollow bodies. Our curriculum and the way we design 99 Fit is something that you can slip in a very subtle kind of environment, right? So what you see a lot of times is people doing a lot of static holds and strength holds to build the gymnastic strength. And that should be part of your regular training, period. That shouldn't be like we do weightlifting and then we do, you know, then we do gymnastics. Right. Like if you noticed in the Open even this year, right? You're seeing that they're doing them together, hand in hand. That's part of regular training now, right? When you get to precision training around, and this is more about motor memory, right? So gymnastics is way more about motor memory. We're all strong enough. We have to learn how to recruit the right muscles at the right time to reach the max range of motion that we can meet, we can get to. So I would say, you know, kind of to get back to the question, the most important thing we need to do when we're training and thinking about it is, you know, we don't do any tight, clean, dynamic movement. That just doesn't happen in our sport. So I would say if they come in and they work, there's really three areas of focus. There is handstand work, mm-hmm. right? There is kipping on bars, and then there's kipping on rings. Now there's a whole bunch of other stuff that other guys can teach you if they want to make you a gymnast.
Right.
We're not here to make you a gymnast. Right. What we're here is to make you a better version of yourself in the sport that you love, mm-hmm. right? So if your goal is to just be that better version of yourself, then 3 days a week, each day you come in and you do what we would call core mobility, right? These are some like 8 to 10 minutes of that. And then we do wall mobility, which is for shoulder health. So we really open up ranges of internal, external rotation, shoulder flexion. And then after that, you pick one of the three events and you spend 8 to 10 minutes going through one progression to the next progression, repeat each one 5 times. At the end of a month or 2 months of doing that, the entire way those people move changes. And we've seen it over and over again.
So two things. Did you say, is it 20 minutes of mobility and 10 minutes of work?
For the most part, yeah.
I love it. The second, I lost my train of thought. You're doing it 3 days a week, 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Are you doing the same one or are you picking a different one each time?
That's a good question. No, gymnastics is not about variety. Gymnastics is about repetition, repetition, repetition. And because it's a movement pattern, right? So it's a very precise movement. And so you have to train in a very specific progression. Now, don't get me wrong. Everybody has a different set of progressions. You're going to talk to gymnastics coaches all over the world. They're all right. They have a different way of getting to the end goal, right? Ours is super streamlined. And what we've done is I would say there's like 8 or 10 movements in each of those areas that lead up to those end skills of the 7 kind of gymnastic skills that are in fitness competitions.
Right.
So for us, like for instance, the handstand push-up, right? We spend time just holding a tripod and then you know, repeating, put your feet to the wall, put your feet back down, put your feet to the wall, feet back down, and doing that until you find cadence and rhythm and get the balance so that it doesn't feel awkward to you. And then, okay, now we're going to move on to the next one. We'll do the same thing, but we'll take our head off the ground by an inch, but we'll lower back down. Mm-hmm. So we build strength from bottom to top, from the hole all the way to the top, as opposed to what most people do where they work on this for like 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. So we teach down here, nice and low, so we're building that core strength and shoulder strength. But in that scenario, every athlete starts at number one.
Right.
They repeat that five times, but it's easier for the athlete who's done it for a while. Mm-hmm. So they just motor through their five easy skills. They move to the next set of skills, and if they're easy for them, they motor through those. So it's that 8 minutes.
Right.
You get to the point where you're starting to fail or have errors, you stop, mm-hmm. and you just keep working your way up. So they're getting the reps over and over again.
Right, right, right. So are they advancing the longer they're doing this? Are they advancing and not going back, or are there still those elements, the basic elements, or are they leaving those behind?
No, they always do the basic elements. And again, you're efficient. This is all about movement efficiency, right? So the more efficient you are, the easier it is to get those reps done. So you really, within the same 8 minutes, you get more work done, you get more reps of the skill you're struggling with. But again, this is not an approach where we're going to turn you into a gymnast. What I want you to do is learn to move more efficiently over a period of time. And so to do that, repeat. Mm-hmm. It's all about repetition in gymnastics.
Gotcha. Now, would your approach be similar? So say you get an athlete where they are on kind of gymnastic type CrossFit events. They're placing first in the world in the open. They're winning them at regionals, that kind of thing. And then you have another athlete, say like Jake, that, you know, back squats 600 pounds, runs a 5 minute mile almost, mm-hmm. and you know, he can do 12 muscle ups and not 20. That's the last thing keeping him from the games, that kind of thing. What's your differing approach with those type?
Well, the first thing is you got to have him. The hardest challenge with well, let's put it this way. It's about motivation to try something different, right? This is not, I mean, a lot of times these guys have been doing it a certain way for so long, right, that it's very, very hard to repeat the new strategy enough, mm-hmm. right? So the way we tackle that is through drills so that they don't think they're changing it. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we're going to have them do these five or six drills. Once we get them committed to like, okay, you want to get more efficient, you do these five or six drills for a month. And I don't want you to even think about doing muscle ups other than just strict to get strong, okay. right? And so spend a month just doing our drills. And then here's what happens naturally. Guys like that with that kind of talent, they just do it. Mm-hmm. One time they get up on the rings and they're now using the new technique instead of the old technique, and now they're getting their 20 muscle ups. Because for them, it's not strength. Maybe a little bit of range of motion, but generally athletes of that caliber, they have range of motion. They just don't know how to actually get there, right? So my approach with those kind of guys is just first get them to the point where they believe, okay, this guy's not, you know, he knows what he's doing.
Right.
And if I believe in what he's saying, then I'll be able to do an extra 8 or 9 muscle ups. Mm-hmm. And then have them work the drills. Everything that you learn in gymnastics is a series of small drills that are pieced together to form a sequence, which is then pieced together to form the skill. So if you work the little segments, and this isn't any different than Olympic lifting, right? It's all broken down.
Yep.
So that's how I approach it with those really high level athletes. And the only difference is they're already high level athletes. So you got to kind of get them first over that idea of like, okay, why do I listen to this guy? We listen to this guy because you see all those other people,
right?
Look at them. They're kicking your ass right now.
I love it. I love it. Let's dive into some even more specific stuff. So we were talking earlier about, you know, teaching a strict muscle up versus a swinging muscle up and that kind of thing. What's your philosophy? Do you teach one before the other?
So this is a tough one. As a gymnastics coach, you know, most gymnastics coaches believe that, you know, you teach gymnastics strict, 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 strict. And strict is everything, because learning to swing is easy, because one of the things they teach in gymnastics is a lot of mobility, right? So mobility and strength go hand in hand so much when they're young, that young athletes, they never develop any like range of motion issues because they're doing strength and flexibility. So you're never getting unbalanced, right? In this sport, we don't have the time, really, to be very fair. We don't have the time to work the kind of gymnastics flexibility necessary to overcome our big muscles that we gain from doing what we're doing. So the reality of it is that everybody that coaches this sport has to recognize, like, there's no set way to do muscle ups, right? There's lots of different strategies and styles. We are very fond of our approach. But when it comes to strict and when it comes to kipping, I think people call it, I actually teach them in parallel pathways. So every athlete that I've ever worked with, I teach them to hang on the rings and swing their body. Changing from the two core positions in gymnastics, which is hollow and arch. While they're hanging, they're learning actually strength. They are getting stronger while they are hanging from the rings. And so they're learning basic swing in a parallel pathway with strength. So at the same time, we're teaching them a strict pull-up. And then ultimately, they never get kind of unbalanced. They never get, you know, too strong to be able to move. And they never get too flexible to not be able to, you know, to lift big weight.
Right. So you were talking earlier about how you, at your seminars, you like to parallel weightlifting with gymnastics. So how does that specifically parallel with your weightlifting side?
Oh, that's good. So the big thing is there's a lot of similarities between the positions of a handstand pushup and let's start with a jerk, anything overhead, right? So what's awkward to me is, and I'm going to move around a little bit here. So, you know, we spent so much time in this sport doing handstand pushups like this, which really there's not a lot like this with this, with everything on one plane.
Right.
There's not a lot like that in our sport.
You can't do a shoulder press like that unless
you're going to land it on your head, right? So, absolutely. So we've been doing it that way for time. And what's interesting to me is that the only reason to do a gymnastics element, in my opinion, this is the way I think, is so that you can lift better, mm-hmm. right? And the only reason to do a lift is so you can do gymnastics better. And if that's your mentality, and you always think technique first and what's going to make me a better, stronger overall athlete, right? Not gymnast, not Olympic lifter, not CrossFitter. I want to make everything I do super efficient because I only have so much time. So what we teach with a handstand pushup is we teach everything from a tight hollow position, nice and round, and we want to simulate the exact same movement pattern as a jerk, right? So we want to be, you know, with the elbows high, and we want to make sure that, you know, as we extend to the very top of the skill, that we're keeping that perfect straight midline, right? As straight as you can possibly be. So, you know, I just don't have any, when I look at people doing it that way, it's not wrong. There's going to be times where they're going to ask you to do that and you're going to have to adapt and do it. But one thing I know is that doing years and years of handstand pushups like this, there's a reason why it's easy for me to put a ton of weight over my head with a barbell. Right. I can line up my joints. I have no range of motion issues in my shoulders. And, you know, even an old guy like me, I can put 300 pounds over my head. I think I put Jake over my head not too long ago, right? I mean, he's 220 and he's like moving all over the place. He's not, you know, it's not a barbell and not tight weight, right?
Right. Have you come across this? Now, I haven't coached 1,200 athletes, but a couple hundred at least.
Yeah.
So I start to teach the tripod method. Right. And two people coming from the everything is stacked on top of each other or just one straight line.
Yeah.
And initially, the tripod is a little bit harder for most people.
Sure.
Do you find people giving up and saying that's not going to work long term? Or what's your approach with that?
No, it isn't. For us, we find immediate success with everyone. And here's how.
Really?
The reason we do is because we set it up with teaching them the hollow shape. Mm-hmm. So they do a handstand on the wall. When they do the handstand on the wall, they're like keeping this nice round position, pressure on the wall. Mm-hmm. Then whenever they go into the handstand push-up position, now we have, at first, we have three points where their body touches the wall. So you got your feet on the wall, because we always do everything belly facing the wall. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good reasons for safety on this, right? So I really think people should pick up on this eventually, is that at this point, now my weight is displaced across my hands on one plane, my head on another plane. And if you really think about it, using the wall as a guide, now I have a third plane, which is where my feet touch. So I can work the negative, right? Return back into the tripod position. And when I hit the bottom, I'm not like tweaking my cervical spine. I'm not getting off balance, and I'm certainly not coming directly up and down. Right. Right? So do I have trouble with it? Absolutely not. Because I don't just teach strict.
Right.
I teach tripod. Mm-hmm. Let's get the rhythm of the to the wall. My head stays on the ground. Boom, boom. Find the rhythm. Then I use my legs to explode, to get an inch off the ground, to get out of the hole.
Right.
And then eventually I go to the handstand and I hold it and I make sure that shape is right. Then I lower back down and get strong on the negative. Mm-hmm. And then pop back up. No problem. Most ladies who have never done handstand pushups before, but have a decent push press, right, can do this and can do it usually the first time you work with them.
I love it. Yeah, but my problem might be that I teach it with back against
of course.
The wall, so it's a little bit, it's a compromised position.
Right? Yep. The thing that the other big advantage here is doing it this way is that you're automatically teaching them from day one how to roll. The one thing that I find shocking in all sport, when I played football, even when I wrestled, right? They didn't walk in day one and say, okay, let's just make sure you guys know how to roll in case you fall, trip, right? My first day into a CrossFit box, I walk in and they had box jumps programmed and I'm in there with a bunch of beginners. I was like 300 pounds at the time, right? Been sitting at a desk for years. I walk up to the box and I look to my left and there's this lady and she's, you know, she's fairly fit, more fit than me. And she's like, what happens if we fall? And I'm like, well, you just roll. Right? I've been doing it my whole life. I don't know anything different, right? But most people are never trained to roll. This way, from the tripod, the first thing we teach is tip to a tripod, tip back to your feet, tip to a tripod, now roll.
Right.
So people are learning to roll immediately. We see awesome athletes mm-hmm. who walk on their hands, and the reason they throw their head out and they arch their back is because they're afraid to fall flat on their back.
Yep. Take that out of their head, and then it's...
They don't know anything different. Right? That's exactly right. So teach people to roll right away, and this is the best way. The first day they come in, you're taking away the number one fear for beginning athletes in the sport, which is, I'm in a handstand. Am I going to lower down to my head?
Wow.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's so foreign for the average person, right? Yeah. So we start from the bottom, and right, we learn 1 inch at a time. Mm-hmm. We work the hardest part of the handstand push-up until they have mastery. We give them the wall as safety. It also teaches them vertical. How many people have you seen do a handstand push-up fall over? Reason they do is because they don't know where vertical is. They just pop over. And they're also used to kicking their heels to the wall, right? So what we do is we get your toes on the wall. It keeps that nice round hollow, locks the body in. And then they slowly over time learn that handstand push-up one safe inch at a time, making sure they displace all of that weight across multiple planes so it's not, you know, danger on the neck.
Right. Diving a little further into the handstand push-up. So I know you do strict and dynamic parallel. What's the word?
Parallel pathways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Parallel pathways.
Yeah.
But when do you think it's appropriate for somebody to start doing something like deficit, something like walking, that kind of thing?
So that's a good question. Walking handstands is really awesome because let's start with the concept of, I'm sure you all do wall walks in your boxes, right? They suck. I hate wall walks and I'm good in a handstand, right? Partially that's because most people when they do wall walks, they have no concept of tension. But if you learn to do like a sequence like tripod, handstand push-up, walk your hands into the wall, walk another step away, walk a step back, walk a step away, walk a step back. Eventually you're 2 steps away, 2 steps back, 3 steps away, 3 steps back. Here's what you're doing. You're teaching people to walk on their hands and they always have the wall to fall back against without crashing. We've taught them to keep that tight wall walk with that hollow body instead of the arch kind of loogie down the wall thing that they do to get down. So we've set up this kind of standard of tension in a handstand, and walking on their hands is easy. And it's great to put together a sequence. They can do lots of different combos and you can have your whole team. What I love about handstand pushups this way, you line the entire wall up with all 15 or 20 of the people and say, okay, everybody in a tripod. Toes to the wall, back down. Toes to the wall, back down. Handstand pushup if you can do it. Go, boom. Back down. Okay, now, anybody who's got this, let's go ahead and take 1 step away from the wall. And as you're watching your athletes, like, they're not going to take it farther than they have to. Everybody's working at the same pace, but when it gets more challenging, some people can continue, and they can walk away, and they can come back. So, you know, to me, once they can do that, where they can take 8 or 9 steps away from the wall and come back, it's no problem. They can do anything on their hands.
I love it. So I'm going to kind of completely shift focus here. That's what I love about these things.
Yeah.
We can go all over the place.
Cool.
So you've coached Duke for how long?
Oh, geez. So Duke came to me back when he was 12 years old. He's 34, something like that now. I trained him through high school, middle school and high school. And I hadn't, you know, he went off to Penn State, got a scholarship to Penn State, was part of two national championship teams there with Penn State. He was on the national team twice whenever I was his coach. Yep. He went on to join the circus, spent about 7 years with Cirque du Soleil, and then retired and then came back to see me in Denver. So that's kind of the story between Duke and I, is that I've always kind of been his coach, even though he's been out traveling the world and doing gymnastics at a really high level. And then recently he came back here and I was like 3 months into I-99 Fit creating it and was just starting to really take off and showed it to him and bang.
Just great timing, right?
Yeah. When he came back, I was like, well, actually, I think he really wanted to, at the time, he, you know, he had the idea that he might come back and, you know, open a box. Mm-hmm. I think that was kind of his dream. And I kind of looked at him and said, hey, man, you ought to check this out just before you go that route, because you're an elite level gymnast. You're also at a time where gymnastics is, as you can see in last year's games, all of a sudden it's required. It's no longer optional, right? You can't, if you can't do a muscle up, guess what?
Right.
You're not competing.
Right.
Right. So the days where you could, you could bang out, you know, 150 wall balls and 100 double unders and get that one muscle up and still be pretty high in the rankings, those days are gone.
Right. Right.
So, you know, he quickly said, you know what, man, this is fun. What you're doing, like this approach. I mean, what's fun for him too is because that's how I trained him. I mean, all the stuff that's in I-99 Fit, just so you know, was a subset of the skills that I trained my guys with. And Duke went through the same curriculum. And so what I did was I selected the things that were most impactful for all of these movements and put them in an order that's very easy for someone to understand. And right. So when Duke saw that and he came out to a class or two and just saw my excitement, here I am doing this again after all these years, mm-hmm. he was like, I'm going to give this a shot. So right. Anyhow, here we are.
I love it, man. So I have kind of this idea, and you know better than I, at the elite level, There's lots of great coaches, right?
Yep.
And in most sports, people are generally doing very similar stuff, right? I'll use weightlifting as an example. Everybody's back squatting, front squatting, snatching, clean and jerking,
sure.
With a couple different accessories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe, like, what makes a great coach and what separates a lot of the absolute best is the relationships that they're able to develop with their athletes. Can you talk about, like, how that played a role with you and Duke over the years and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So, I mean, when Duke first walked in the door, man, he was this little 12-year-old kid. He was a really good gymnast, no doubt. I mean, I could tell within a few minutes. His dad was as big as a house, man. He walks in. He's like, hey, I want you to evaluate my son. And I'm like, okay. He's like, we're from Hawaii. I'm like, okay, cool. And so I spend like 3 minutes with Duke and, you know, to go through some just basic analysis and just see where he is. And I walked over his dad. I'm like, wow. I'm like, I hope you're ready for, like, nice. I hope you got a lot of money and I hope you got, you know, a lot of time on your hands because we're going to be traveling everywhere. And so sure enough, that came together. But, you know, even whenever Duke was like 16 years old and you know, just becoming a young man, I mean, it was like, and I was still young. So I was only like 6 years older than Duke. Right. So, but I had, you know, I was in college and I was training him and a bunch of guys. And so even one summer he came to train with me because it was easier. We'd get up in the morning, we'd drive to the gym at 5 a.m. He'd train, then he'd come back to my house and, you know, just chill there for a little bit. Then we'd go back and train in the evening. So, what I can tell you is that the relationship between Duke and I is unique in that, and it was like that with a lot of the guys, but Duke was super unique is just that, when the two of us took the floor, when he was competing, I mean, I was at the top of my game as a coach, right? I mean, I was the state director. I had written software primarily for Duke to slow down his skills because I couldn't see him anymore. He was getting so good. And you know, so we, at the time, it was just like, it just seemed like magic the whole way through because, I don't know. I mean, like I said, we came on the scene, no one knew who he was. And then all of a sudden the very next year, everybody knew who he was. Everybody knew who I was. And then the video software that I created, you know, USA Gymnastics started using it. The OTC bought it for the weightlifting program. I mean, I had the US water ski team buy the software and it was like, it came in a computer. It was like freaking as big as a house and they got this on the back of a boat. Right. So back in those days, like, we were doing a lot of things first time. Right. Like a lot of cool stuff. So, and I was super young for a coach and, he came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So it built a really strong bond. And I think that, it obviously was here today because he decided he wanted to come back and visit and right. just to say hi. And the next thing you know, it's like, here we are. It's like, and when we go to a clinic together, if you go watch any of our videos online or if you watch any of that kind of stuff, you'll be just like, oh yeah, I can see it.
Right.
You know,
that's awesome, man. Before we wrap up, when do you know it's time to push an athlete and when it's time to kind of, so we were talking earlier about critical versus positive, that kind of thing.
Yep.
When do you know it's time to be a little more critical and it's time to be a little more positive and that kind of thing?
It's a good question. I'm always critical.
Okay.
I'm probably the most critical person that you can think of, but I do it. I always follow up critical with intensity. So like, look, I'm going to say to you, like, look, man, that really looked like shit, right? That was terrible. But look, you got to make one single change. It's like so small. So look, it's so easy. You can make drastic change in a heartbeat if you want to. You are a great athlete. So stop playing around with this. Like, zero in, stand there, arms to the side, chin up, breathe everything out. Like, just push everything out of yourself. Forget about all this shit in your mind and make one little change. But when you make it so drastic that I'm screaming and yelling and running around this place and beating on the walls. And I treat every athlete that way. It doesn't matter if you're an elite level athlete or if you're, you know, a lady who comes in for her first day and is scared out of her mind to do a handstand or a headstand or anything like that, right? It's always the same thing. All athletes are the same. And it doesn't matter how good they are or if they've never done anything. They all want one thing, and that is someone to lead them. They want to be led through this experience. And the only way you can lead someone through an experience like this is that you have to be committed to being critical of their performance 100% of the time, but not negative. There's a difference between critical and negative. Critical is what you're getting paid to do. That's it, flat out. Your job as a coach is to be critical. But at the same time, you have to be able to motivate that person. And so if you're negative, you can throw all that shit away. I'm never, well, shouldn't say never negative. I'm less negative now that I'm coaching adults than I was when I coached kids, because kids are still dealing with, like, they're doing this because they don't know why they're doing it, right? Most of the people that walk into a box, they know why they're doing it. They're here and they're busting their ass, and all they want is someone to come in and be like, okay, I'm not just going to scream at you from across the room. I'm going to run up in your face. I'm going to be like, that was freaking awesome. Right. But if you fix this one thing, one little thing, you are going to kill it. And that's kind of how I approach it. Everything.
That's great, man. Your passion is very contagious, and it's not something I think you can decide. I want to be passionate, right? You got to love it. And that's awesome. I think it's, you know, people can definitely pick from this and learn a little bit, but you have a gift for sure. For sure.
Well, I appreciate that. I think at the end of the day, it's passion is contagious. And when you think that you don't have that passion, or you think you're burning out, every coach goes through times they're burning out. It isn't that hard to get back. All it takes is that one athlete to walk in and show you that they care. And when you see that in them, you'll care too. So, my advice to any coach who's feeling that way, because we've all been there, is just one thing. Stop right there. Don't do anything else. Look around the room. Find the one athlete that needs you the most. And then go to them and spend time with them. And then, you know what? In 2 minutes, the passion comes back, because you just got to see it happen.
Where can we find you on social media, the interwebs, that kind of thing?
Cool. You can find us at I99Fit anywhere. That's our... Instagram, I99Fit, okay. Everywhere like that. We're everywhere. So you also can find us on Vecchio.com soon. We'll be doing some live training sessions. It'll be Vecchio.com/I99Fit as well. And that's where we're going to do, like, live interactive events, probably right from right here, where we're going to give you guys a chance to call in, ask your questions, talk to us, talk to all of our coaches. We're going to take this thing nationwide so we can meet the demand.
Awesome. Is there a seminar list on your website?
There is. You can go to our website. We've got things broken out by, local semi-private lessons that we do with on a regular basis, like I mentioned. We also have bigger seminars or clinics that are all on the website. They're easy to find. Our calendar is pretty easy to kind of navigate and find the location you're interested in.
Awesome.
If you're interested in ever booking us to come out to do clinics or coaches clinics, we travel. We'll do a full weekend at your box. When we do, we'll come in, we'll teach your coaches first, right after the coaches clinic.
That's awesome.
We'll then bring in your athletes and do an athlete clinic so that your coaches can participate and get their certification with hands-on. So it is our whole strategy is community with gymnastics. We want those coaches to work with their athletes, and we want those athletes to see the commitment that the box owner has made to bring in elite level gymnastics coaching.
I love it, man. Appreciate it. Thanks again.
Cool, man. Thanks.